the Sicha for Parshas Ekev is in Chelek Beis, Volume 2 of Likutei Sichos. This Seder, Parshas Ekev, is one of the seven Haftozas of consolation. And the Rebbe says that the Haftozah is a reflection of the Seder. So if the Haftozah is one of consolation, then it must also be true that the Seder, the Parsha itself, also contains a consolation. And that is a consolation for the Golus. And a reminder or encouragement for the coming Geula. The truth is that all of Torah is really about Geula, because who is considered free? Who is considered a free person? The Mishnah says, only one who studies Torah. Because through the study of Torah, we free our neshama from the gullus of the animal soul and the body. And that brings eventually to the freedom, to the geula of the body in the literal sense, from its exile in the physical world. But every place else in Torah, it speaks about the various subjects of mitzvahs and so on, and through those mitzvahs and through the study of Torah, we come to geula. But in these parshas, in the seven parshas of consolation that come after Tisha B'Av, here the Geula is spoken of directly. Where do we see it? We see that being in Golus, that we are right now in Golus, so in order to explain Geula, in order to be able to appreciate and understand Geula, we first have to understand what is Golus, what is its cause, and how do we rectify the cause. Because when you rectify the cause, then automatically and very thoroughly the effect produced by this cause is removed and nullified. And that brings us to the geula. As in the example of a person who is ill, if he knows that he is ill, and he knows what the illness consists of, then he will know that he has to go to a doctor, because he knows that he's ill, and when he goes to the doctor, he will know what to tell the doctor. He will be able to describe his illness so that the doctor is better able to help heal him. So the knowledge itself that he is ill, and the knowledge of what the illness consists of, this is already half of the cure, which enables the other half of the cure to take place as well. So in the knowledge and in the understanding of what is the Golus and what produced the exile, what produced the Golus, that is already the beginning of Geula, the beginning of redemption, because knowing what the Golus is, we're halfway to the promised land, to the Eretz Teva Urechava. When the Jews came to Israel the first time, they got there through the desert, through a great desert. And when they came out at the other end of the desert, then they entered into Eretz Yisrael. And since all the events in Torah are a lesson and a blueprint for what will follow through history for all generations, so the fact that the Jews came into Israel after going through a desert, that tells us also something about our geula, that our geula comes after we go through our desert. And in this knowledge, the understanding of what the desert was then will help us understand how our desert, the one that we're in today, helps us prepare for the geula. And so we see in today's Seder, one of the seven parshas of consolation, we are told about the desert. And the Torah describes the desert as follows. It says that this was a Midbar HaGodol. It was a great desert, large desert. V'hanoira, an awesome desert. A place of Nachash, of snakes. Saraf, of burning snakes. The Akrav, and scorpions. Utzimoin, and a thirst because of a lack of water. These are the different details that the Torah tells us about that desert, which is a reflection also on the desert that we are in. Desert means a place where that is uninhabited, not a place for people, not a place for Adam. So the Torah says that this Midbar, this uninhabited place, is Godel, was very large, a Greisa Midbar, which means that the place that is uninhabited is greater and larger than the place that is inhabited. Particularly, if we take it on a deeper level, a place that is inhabited means a place that is inhabited by Yiddishkeit. As the Shalosh says, that when it says Adam in Torah, it means the Jewish people, because Adam comes from the word Adame, a reflection of above. And every Jew is a reflection from above, a heavenly reflection. So, Midbar Gadol, the place where there is no Yiddish, where there is no holiness, where there is no Yiddishkeit, is much greater than the place in where Yiddishkeit is. Particularly since Jews are atem hama'at mikol ha'amim, we are a tiny minority of all among all the other nations. And so when a person starts to consider the world in which Yiddishkeit does not exist, as a great Midbar, he is impressed by the greatness, by the vastness of the rest of the world. This is the beginning of the discouragement of the Golos. And particularly when a Jew considers that not only are Jews a minority, but in the time of Golos, at least temporarily, the Jews who are practicing Torah and Mitzvahs are not yet the majority of Jews. So the first thing that the Torah tells us about the Golos, the cause of the Golos, is that we see the Midbar as great. We see the Midbar as being very large. So the first cause, the first step downwards into Golos, is the feeling that a Jew has when he looks around at the world and he sees that the world is bigger than him. And that the place of Torah and Mitzvahs is a very tiny place compared to the rest of the world. The truth is, of course, that the world has no control and no authority over a Jew. On the contrary, as we say in the Haftorah of this parsha, "V'hoyu melochim enayich v'sadeseihem enikisayich," that the time will come when kings will serve the Jews and ministers will be the assistants of the Jew, as the Gemara says concerning the mitzvah of Tefillin, that v'zol kol ami ha'aretz, when the nations of the world see that the name of God is upon you, then they fear you. And that's referring to the Tefillin that we wear on the head, that when a Jew has on his head the words of the that are contained in the Tefillin, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and his mind, his intellect, is surrounded by this awareness, it's wrapped around his head, that God is the only master of the entire world, then all the nations of the world are respectful of the Jew and want to help him. But when the Jew starts to think that it's Midbar HaGadol, that it's a very large desert, he gives the world, the non-Torah world, the non-holy world, an importance and a significance. And he says, the world is so large and I am so small, he doesn't see how we can sustain ourselves. But the question itself, that doubt is what gives the world such significance in his own mind. This is the beginning of a state of Golos for this person. Golos being a Helen Vehesta, a concealment where he no longer recognizes that what he has is the truth and is the greater power, the greater truth, and he feels subservient, he feels diminished by the size of the world. But when he remembers that God chose us and elevated us and lifted us up and gave us a Torah, then he is not intimidated by anything, knowing that he is higher and has more substance than the rest of the world, closer to the truth, and then he is not in Golus at all. Then he understands and he recognizes that God gives him his livelihood, and he can conduct his business in a kosher, honest way according to the teachings of the Torah, and then he will even have time left over to have a daily session for the study of Torah. So, seeing the world as intimidating, as overwhelmingly large, this is the beginning of his galus. And if he persists in that, he goes down a step further where the midbar, the galus, the world, is not only gadol, it's not only a vast midbar, but it's also v'hanoira, it becomes also the awesome desert. When the world is large, and he feels diminished, he feels insignificant by comparison, then as long as he remains within his own world, as long as he's in the yeshiva, as long as he's in the synagogue, or in his own home, there he feels comfortable being a Jew. He's only intimidated when he goes out into this large world, and it dwarfs him. But when he starts to consider the world not only large, but also awesome, then he is not only feeling insignificant, but he's feeling threatened by the world. And then, even in his own home, even in his synagogue, even in his yeshiva, he feels that he has to compromise, he has to submit to the dictates of the world, and he can't be a Jew even in his own environment. And that leads to a further descent, where it's not only a great desert, not only an awesome desert, but it also becomes a nachash, it becomes a snake. We're told that the venom of a snake is hot. It burns. And here, what it means that the desert is a place of a nachash, a place of a snake, is that he starts to develop an enthusiasm and a passion for worldly things that distract him from holiness. The step after that is that he comes to a desert of a sadaf, a burning, consuming snake. Not only does he become enthusiastic and passionate about worldly things that distract him from his passion for holy things and for goodness, but it completely destroys, it completely consumes all his enthusiasm for holiness. Sadaf, it's completely burnt up. All his enthusiasm for holiness is drained away into the unholy. And that can get even worse, where the midbar, the desert, the galus, becomes an akrav, it becomes a scorpion. The scorpion's venom, we're told, is a cold venom. It freezes the tissue. And so the desert becomes, has the effect on the Jew in galus, that he starts to feel a coldness, an indifference to all matters of holiness and of Yiddishkeit. And that's even worse than the snake and the sadaf. Because as long as there is warmth and enthusiasm, as long as there is passion, even if it is for the wrong things, but it is very easy to transform a passion that is misguided into a passion for the right things. Because as long as you're alive, as long as you're enthusiastic, that can be channeled into a good direction. But coldness, indifference, this you can't use for anything. You can't channel it. You can't redeem it. It's a lifelessness, and with lifelessness, there's nothing you can do. So that's worse even than an enthusiasm for the wrong things. And this leads to an even greater descent, an even worse state of Golos. And that is Tzimoin, a thirst when there is no water. This means that the person is so trapped in the exile, in the Golos, he is so overwhelmed by what the world seems to be demanding of him, that even when from above, his soul is stirred, and he develops a yearning and a thirst for godliness. His neshama wants to get closer to godliness, either because of the heavenly voice that daily calls on the neshama to return, to come back to godliness, as Chassidus explains. And so he develops a thirsting and a yearning for godliness. Even then, he can't find his way back to Torah, because Ein Mayim, he has no access to the water of life, which is the Torah. He doesn't know what it is he's thirsting for. He doesn't know what it is he's yearning for, because he has completely forgotten that holiness even exists. And so he can't imagine that his thirst is for holiness. And where does all of this begin? What is the first step into this terrible condition of alienation and entrapment in Golos? All of it begins with that first thought, where he considers the Midbar HaGodol, because he feels intimidated by the vastness and by the size, the intimidating size of the rest of the world. And by giving it that kind of significance, that is the first step that leads him into the descent that eventually ends up with a thirsting, but without a way of finding your way home. And so we understand from this that the first step in repairing the Golos and in getting out of the Golos and producing a state of Geula, the first step is to have a confidence and to feel strong and secure in the awareness that Ata b'chatonu mikol ha'amin v'zei mamtonu, that qualitatively, in terms of truth and in terms of holiness, we have access to that holiness. We were elevated by the mitzvah that we were given and by the closeness that we have to God, and that should actually make the rest of the world that doesn't have this access look insignificant compared to us. And that way you shed the cloth, mantle of Golos, and you are ready to go into the land, into the good land, with Mashiach Tzidkenu b'mheira b'yameinu. With this, we'll also understand the statement in the Gemara concerning the laws of davening. The law is that while you're saying the Shemona Esrei, you're not allowed to interrupt for any reason at all. Not even if the king walks into the room. Another law is that if a person finds a nachash, he finds that there's a snake crawling around his ankles, he should not interrupt the davening. But if he finds a scorpion crawling around his ankle, then he should interrupt the davening and save himself from the scorpion. The meaning of it is that when a person is in the middle of davening, which means that he's going about his Yiddishkeit, he is serving God, and in the middle of this, he feels a warmth that isn't holy. He suddenly feels an attraction and an enthusiasm for something other than godliness. That's the snake, as I said before, the snake's venom is warm, is hot, and that's what's crawling around his ankle. So although this is not good, yet he doesn't have to interrupt his davening. On the contrary, he should daven better. Because eventually, if he davens better, he will draw the enthusiasm or the warmth that he's feeling for unholy things into the davening, and it'll become part of his holiness. But if a person is davening and he suddenly feels a scorpion effect around his ankles, he's feeling a coldness, an indifference. So here, even if it's only around his ankle, the coldness hasn't affected his mind or his heart. But it's beginning to affect him around the ankles. That's enough reason to interrupt, to stop what he's doing, and to reconsider and find a better way to serve God. Because the coldness, as we said before, is worse than an enthusiasm for the wrong things. The lack of enthusiasm, this indifference and this coldness shows that he's not on the right track, that he's not serving God in the right manner at all. And therefore he has to stop this kind of service, davening meaning service, he has to stop this way of serving God, and he has to find a more effective way of serving God, a way that ignites his neshama, that warms him to the service and makes the service a live, living, enthusiastic one. And generally that means that he has to come to the service of God through the study of Pnimius HaTorah, through the study of Chassidus, because the study of Chassidus is the tree of life that brings enthusiasm to all other parts of Torah. And so by learning this week's Seder that describes for us the process, the causes that lead us into the Golus, into the depth of the Golus, into this vast, awesome desert that swallows up the people, and by understanding the causes of the Golus, we are halfway to Geula, because we know what we need to correct. And primarily, as the Rebbe said, primarily we need to correct this feeling of intimidation, the feeling that because the world is larger than us, we therefore can't have an effect on it, but it must instead have an effect on us. When in fact, that which we have, the godliness which we carry, and the message which we bring to the world, is the most powerful and the truest and the most promising of a good world and a transformed world, that we have the ability to change the world. And we need not be intimidated. We may not be intimidated into thinking that because we are small in number, small in size, that our message is therefore not as effective, not as important, and not as powerful. But on the contrary, Ata b'chatanu mikol ha'amim, we were given the mission, and we were given the ability, certainly, to change the world and make it a dwelling place for God by spreading the teachings and the practice of Torah and mitzvahs throughout the whole world, wherever we come in the various travels in this desert, just as it was then, that the Jews traveled and camped and traveled and camped, bringing godliness to all the places where they stopped and all the places that they covered and traveled through, until the entire Midbar was not only not a place of defeat and alienation, but it was actually a preparation, a warm-up for the coming into Eretz Yisrael, for the Geula that will come at the end of this long Golus, which serves as a preparation that actually brings the Geula with the coming of Mashiach, the Mehedah B'Yameinu.